Welcome to the Abwazi Wine Buzz podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clinton Lee. Before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to share with you about my new book, Mastering the Art of Etiquette. This is my first book, and I'm super excited to share it with you. Readers will discover a new perspective on the rules of manners and etiquette and how it pertains to us in everyday societal situations. So if you want to be more confident, feel less anxious in unfamiliar cultural and etiquette situations, then this book is for you. You can pre-order it today, and I've included it in the show notes. Good morning, everyone. This is another episode of the Abwazi Wine Buzz. It gives me great pleasure to bring exciting, innovative, new characters. I like to call them characters because they are the ones that write the story of the world of wine that we all live in. And today's guest is someone I think who would be best to describe themselves because they come in from so many different angles. But my guest today is Dana Spaulding. Welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Dana, as I said, I would like to know, and I think our audience would like to know about you. What six words would best describe you?
It's a tough question always for specific words, but I always consider myself first and foremost an optimist. I think of myself as kind, determined. I like, ever since founding my company, I put brave in that category. Really passionate is also something that I've always really found myself, but particularly as a founder of a new business, and inspired. I'm inspired by everything around me, from family, other businesses, friends. So those are, it's hard to select just six. That's a great question. I think I choose those.
Well, I think those six words that you've used to describe yourself are really ones that many of our audience can relate to. And one that rings a great bell for me is the word brave. Now you have succinctly in one word encapsulated what many business owners go through. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the trials, the tribulations, the cut, the thrust and parry of the gladiatorial arena of business. Now, talking about that, you have followed countless others, you know, from the finance world to the wine world, similar to myself. Yeah. What was the catalyst for you to make that change?
My world of finance was in private wealth management, and I really loved the role. My role was, my team and I managed wealth for successful entrepreneurs. And most recently in that role, I was managing wealth for entrepreneurs in the food and beverage category. And so for me, I spent a lot of time getting inspired by those that I was working for. They would build up these great innovative businesses in food and beverage, sell them, come into large amounts of wealth. And my team and I would manage their wealth for them. But I was often thinking, I'd love to be on the other side of the table and doing what my clients are doing, which is building up these really, really innovative food and beverage companies. So I was inspired for several years to step into the category, but really wasn't sure what that was until my husband asked me the question of, are you really going to waste another bottle of wine? And for me, that was the catalyst question, the question that sparked curiosity and honestly, initially frustration, because I wanted to have one great glass and I wanted to enjoy it while he enjoyed his glass of whiskey or beer. He tended to not drink as much wine. Mm-hmm. And he was really highlighting that frequently I was opening a bottle and wasting it because I'd only have a glass or so. And so that initial frustration sparked my curiosity to really dive into the category. Honestly, initially, it was just personally understanding what single serve wine, what alternative wine formats were out there. Mm-hmm. And I pretty quickly recognized that they're really low quality wines and really low quality packaging. And when I dug even deeper, I identified very little to no focus and natural and organic ingredients. And so I thought, okay, there are enough differentiators here that if we do this, we could step in and be so unique in the market. And because of all of those gaps that I recognized that I was looking for in the market, and like I said, all those differentiators, that for me gave me the courage to at least to start to build the business model. And then once I really built out the business plan, it took about 6 or so months, talked through it with my family, really understood the business that I wanted to create, and then got the courage to finally step away from what was a pretty comfortable finance career.
Well, congratulations to you for taking that step.
Thank you.
I know there's countless others all across the globe. The first thing that they encounter is, what name? So your company has a unique name, and the plus in between the two names, Wonder plus Ivy. Could you share the inside story about that, please?
Sure. It's true. It's one of the first things you think of. What on earth am I going to call this? And I really wanted the brand name to represent a lot of what makes us different. So a lot of those key differentiating points that I touched on. And initially, I recognized that a lot of the alternative format wines were really focused on US-based wines. And we're a licensed importer. And I thought if we could do this in a way that was wandering the world to find the best wines and bringing them here to our consumer, that would be really unique. And so that was how we landed on Wander. And then Ivy was even more special to me because I wanted to touch on green, natural, organic wine without using any of those words directly. And I felt like Ivy exuded all of those things in a more subtle way. So it could have brought this green and natural organic element to the name that felt subtle, felt beautiful. And for me, you know, honestly, the plus sign, that was more of a kind of personal preference for the way in which it feels very modern. It feels modern with the way in which we bring together Wander and Ivy. And together, I think they're just so aesthetically pleasing. And so really, really proud to, I think together they represent more of a lifestyle and a brand versus just a product, which is really what I was aiming for.
Well, certainly there's a uniqueness, Dana. And for those that perhaps, when they see the word Wonder plus Ivy, it doesn't instinctively bring up the world of wine. Mm-hmm. So perhaps you could just tell us a little bit more about the Wonder Ivy business model and what makes it unique and why viewers should consider buying your wine.
Oh, I appreciate it. So Wonder and Ivy wines are all premium organic single serve wines. They're all, I'm realizing I always have one on my desk, but to show you here, Doctor. So they're all our 6.3 ounces of premium wines. They're all made with certified organic grapes. They're each sourced from a different award-winning family-owned vineyard around the world. And they're really, of course, packaged in these elegant, easy to open, patented glass bottles. So very different from what exists in the alternative packaging space, the cans, the bags, the boxes, which, as I mentioned, tend to be lower quality wines. Ours is really meant to be a premium wine inside a premium package to really give you that luxury experience at an affordable price point.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. I mean, 6.5, that's quite a generous pour.
Yeah, 6.3. So it's technically a 187 milliliter. So you get the 6.3 ounces there. But yes, it's 1/4 of a bottle. I always like to say it's one good hefty pour.
Oh, it is a good hefty pour indeed. That's true. Now, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting many people around the world in wine, and I'm sure you have. Now, I wanted to know from your personal perspective, have you been involved in a harvesting before, you know, of the grapes? And have you made wine before you started your own brand?
You know, I have to say, I'm fortunate enough to surround myself with people who've been in the industry for 20 to 30 years. I've also been around the harvests and been I wouldn't say as intimately involved, though, as, you know, others who've done it for years and years. I've just had the absolute pleasure of seeing it, witnessing others do their magic. But what I've really been focused on, because I came from the world of finance, as we talked mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. I got my certifications with the Court and International Wine Guild to really build my knowledge. But I knew stepping into this that I don't come with years of experience, you know, in the harvest like a lot of others do. So I'm very, very fortunate that We have folks on our team that have spent many, many years making wine. I get to witness it now, but I didn't step into it with that experience.
Is there a sort of interest in you to sort of get your hands dirty and, you know, doing the sorting and picking and, you know, getting the must going and adding the, you know, the sort of starter fermentation? Have you ever felt?
Oh, yeah. I mean, are you kidding? Yes. I mean, absolutely. So to give you a little bit more of a sense of our business model to back up, to date, we actually partnered the family-owned vineyards around the world that we partner with. We've worked with them for years, and we historically have always imported and purchased fully finished wines, which has been wonderful from a business model perspective, fully finished premium wines. But we actually just this morning got off a call with a winemaker on our team talking through the next step for us, which is, yes, we will continue doing our business model where we're purchasing in bulk and bottle labeling and packaging. But now we're also having a conversation on Wander and Ivy buying not fully finished, but the grapes, the fruit now, to be able to fully be a part of the process from beginning to end in that winemaking. So yes, there's high curiosity. And I think it'll be really interesting to add that. It's really, I think it'll be a complementary piece to our business to continue to source from people that are incredible at what they do, but also create the magic on our end as well.
Of course, and it only enhances the experience.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you actually bottle and do all the packaging in the United States, or is it already done for you outside?
We do. So we have our production facility here in California in the United States, and we bottle, label, package everything here. What's very, very exciting is that to date, we have actually modified existing 750 milliliter bottling lines to get to the end product that has our wine in this patented packaging. But as you can imagine, that has been one of our biggest challenges because there has been such little innovation in the category. It's been quite challenging to modify an existing line. So what we're very, very excited about is we've invested in a Wander and Ivy custom bottling line that allows us not only to bottle our custom 187s, but bottle any of the other packages as well, up to Magnums. And so that's very exciting for us that we have that ability, because to date, it's been a challenge, quite honestly, but all of it will continue to be in Napa, California.
Okay, good to know. Now, what about the challenges to securing consistency in your wine offerings?
Consistency across varietals, is that really what you mean by that?
Yeah, like one year to another, you know, what sort of process do you go through to say, oh, well, this vintage is equally or surpasses the previous one?
That's a great question. I love that. I get it asked all the time. So we've worked consistently with the same producers, which has been key for us to not only always source from the same region, but from the same folks. And I'm very mindful of the varietal blends that go into them as well. For example, our red blend from Valencia, Spain, since founding the business, has been a 55% Beaubal, 45% Merlot, and is consistent every year. Not to say that it can't change slightly year to year, but what we really want to as a team is to have a consumer know and fall in love with our red blend as an example. And vintage to vintage, they understand there might be slight tweaks, but really have it be pretty close. And so we pay attention not only to who we're sourcing from, where the varietal, but then taste it. So I just last night was going through a tasting of all of our kind of upcoming, whether it's new varietals or new vintages of existing varietals, and tasting through consistency before we make any of those next vintage purchases, making sure they hit on what our consumers and of course our team come to expect. And so now we have a team of sommeliers and winemakers that taste year to year to make sure, is it in line? And as you said, is it of or higher the quality that's expected by the consumer? So a year-long process, I would say, in partnering with our suppliers to make sure we deliver that consistency to consumers.
That's good to know. That's good to know, Dana. Now, you know, there's an emphasis on, you know, I was looking at your marketing, there's an emphasis on the grapes being organic, not necessarily the wine being organic, but the grapes. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason for this?
Oh, sure. The difference between organic wine and made with organic. So ours, particularly because we source international lines, it's very important to me to add at least a minimal amount of sulfites to be able to have it be shelf stable, to be able to make sure the quality of the wine is consistent across the board. So to my point on consistency earlier, this is a big part of it. And so certainly understand that there are some quality organic wines out there, but for those listening who might not necessarily know, our difference with wine made with organic grapes versus organic wines is that we do have anywhere up to 1 to 100 parts per million of sulfites. And so because of that, we really think that we protect the wine, particularly the wines that are coming from Spain, Italy, and France that are shipped across the ocean. We're really protecting them and allowing for a strong stable shelf life, which I know is quite challenging without that. And so it's something I've been so focused on, no added sugar, organic grapes, minimal, clean as much as possible. But I do recognize that we want it at the end of the day to be quality and stable on the shelf. So that minimal amount of sulfites is something that gives us the difference between made with organic versus organic wine.
Well, thank you for that, Dana, because many of the wine consuming population don't sort of realize you need to have sulfites in order to maintain the crispness, and also you want to prevent spoilage, certainly at the early parts of the winemaking process. Now, one of the words that I often associate with you is trendy. All right, so you're sort of
Thank you.
trendy, you're into the world of wine, and there's a growing section of millennials that are now starting to represent a larger buying percentage in terms of the world of wine. And many of these consumers are concerned about sustainability and carbon footprint, and you use glass. Right. How does Wonder plus Ivy contribute to reducing this carbon footprint?
Sure. So it's definitely a complicated world. The fact that we're sustainable in glass, it's something that we're proud that you can recycle the actual individual bottles and something that we can repurpose. So that's something that it's actually been really fun to see with all of our consumers and that yes, it is a heavy material, but if you can recycle it and repurpose it over and over again, it gives it's so much more of a lifespan for it, which is really wonderful. And so we see folks as an example using them for florals or vinegar, olive oils for their soy sauce. So it's actually been really fun to see. So that's from the recycling and repurposing side of it. From the packaging standpoint, I will say to your question on do we bottle everything here within the United States? And that's big for us because the answer for that was yes, in that we ship internationally in our bulk recyclable packages from, as I mentioned, Spain, Italy, France, New Zealand that we've shipped from in bulk. And so for us, that's meant anywhere between 10,000 to 48,000 liters. And so that for us is very minimal in terms of footprint. And then once it's in our glass, we really push for as much as possible to have that be recycled and repurposed long term. Does that answer
All
your
right.
question?
Yeah, so I think it's one of the more pressing questions that I find in having interviewed many and spoken to a number of this growing section of the wine consumer, they're not so much concerned about points. They're not so much concerned about pricing. It's more these two factors. And thank you for answering it so eloquently.
Of
Now,
course.
I'm wondering if that comes from your origin. You're from Italy originally.
My family, I will say, I will say I studied abroad in Italy. My grandparents are from northern and southern Italy. My maiden name is Ferrero, so very Italian. I guess it spent some time there, but I wasn't born and raised there. I was born and raised on the East Coast. But I have a lot of
Okay.
family from northern and southern Italy.
All right. Signora Pale Italiano.
Oh gosh, I wish I studied Spanish throughout most of my life, but I lived there, I could speak a little bit, but I'm very, very rusty,
Okay.
unfortunately.
Which part in the north? of a tradition?
So my grandfather's side is from Piedmont, and
Okay.
my grandmother's side is from Sicily. So you
Okay.
know, very different ends of the spectrum.
Okay. Ever thought of getting Italian wines?
So yeah, so we just ran out actually of our Italian white wine. We tested it, and it was lovely. It worked really well. I will say we pretty consistently heard that if we're going to have a second white, that Sauvignon Blanc was more popular in higher demand. So not to say we won't bring our Italian white back. We did it in a smaller test, but I do see a pretty large demand, especially in the United States, for Sauvignon Blanc. And so we will be launching a Sauvignon Blanc as our second, I say second white because we probably always have a California Shard in our lineup. But in addition to that, we're launching a Sauvignon Blanc from France very soon.
Okay, I'm sure that's something to look forward to.
Yes, very
Now,
much.
Dana, you've undertaken certain studies, and I'm sure you've tasted countless bottles of. Are you going to waste another bottle, dear?
Yeah.
Right. What sort of personal singular wine tip would you like to share with the viewers, Dana? Your personal wine tip.
You know, it's funny. I think especially for the millennials who are stepping into the category, I still think wine has folks are nervous about it because there's this idea that you have to step in with a tremendous amount of knowledge, and it feels, for lack of a better word, a little bit snooty in ways that you just have to step in with that, or else you won't enjoy it. And I think it's just a matter of stepping in and knowing what you like and not being afraid to share, especially when you go to a restaurant now, especially in a post-pandemic world, we're all out and eating. And I think getting recommendations and not being afraid to ask questions, even if you're not coming from a place of a somm background, you know, it doesn't matter. Stepping in to say, you know, I tend to like these flavors. Do you have a recommendation? I think that that is so wonderful. And that could just continue to expand your own personal palette. Just be more exploratory, I think, is a short way of saying that, and not nervous about not coming in with all of that education of just kind of knowing initially some flavor profiles you might like and asking for folks, especially when you're out at a restaurant and someone can give you a great tip or a great advice, piece of advice on what wine to pair. Just try it, you know, don't be nervous about it.
Okay, so be adventurous, explore, and don't have constraints on what you want to try. Well, that's certainly very sound advice, and I think it's one that will resonate across borders, which is quite infrequent when one does get certain advice. It's quite geographical, and talking about that. You're in the wine industry now, and you are totally immersed in it, Dana. That's all you do, in terms of course, bringing up a family, which is the most important. What's your vision for the wine industry? Let's say now in the United States, certainly in Napa, the recent Silicon Valley Bank, many wineries were involved. They were one of the major lenders. And being in the finance background, I'd like to sort of hear your views on that. And where do you see the wine industry moving ahead?
Oh, there's so many things in there. Thank you for asking. I will say, we fortunately didn't have our funds at Silicon Valley Bank, but I think it exposed so many major challenges within the finance sector. And as you mentioned, it really touched the wine category specifically across California, especially.
Yes, because most of the press coverage was on the IT section, but there's a large proportion in the wine world.
Oh, you're right. I mean, I will say Silicon Valley Bank's wine industry report is something that I read every year. They are deeply ingrained in the industry. They come with data reports because they're deeply ingrained in it, in the category. So you're absolutely right. It received very little press. For, you know, I've certainly followed from the finance side, from the tech side, the wine side, but also just the more broader startup side. And I think what it showed was how impacted innovators across the board were. And it's so challenging to receive funding, to receive that lending when you're doing something new and innovative in a category. We're an investor-backed company. And so raising funds is something that is incredibly challenging. Women, unfortunately, still receive, wildly enough, 2.3% of all venture funding. And that is a major challenge. That is a major issue across just startups and folks that are innovating across all categories. And so that, I would say, is something when you, to your initial question of what do I hope I see in the category, it would be more funding towards innovation. And sometimes that comes from venture, sometimes it comes from more institutionals like Silicon Valley banks. Sometimes it comes from individuals, high net worth groups, some more of angel investors. But across the board, what I'd love to see is funding towards the folks that are diverse and that are innovating in the category. Because I think we've all seen the data that when it comes to corporate teams, board, decision making, everything is better and ultimately has led to more profitability when there's more diverse thinking across the board. And so that to me would be my ultimate dream for the wine category, but especially just more broader, the startup category of funding to diverse teams who are really innovating. And hopefully we're paving our way in, a little bit to make that happen.
Well, I agree with you in terms of the diverse teams. My formal studies have taken me through that. I've done extensive research on that. My question to you is, how would you define the diverse team? Because both you and I have been in finance together, and when we look at a project, we don't look at specifically who the owner is. We look at the numbers. So how would you try and expand that to cover that?
How do I think about diverse team? For us,
How would you
we
define it?
I how would I define it? I normally, we proudly refer to ourselves as female founded and female led because we have a lot of females in our leadership team. That's such a great question. I think it for me, I always have explained it to my team, investors, and board, in that the way I think about diversity is diverse skill sets and diverse backgrounds, where folks come from, what they're bringing to the table. And not only what we look like, because I think that's an obvious in terms of backgrounds, but really what skill sets are we bringing to the table? And I'm really proud that our team does come from very diverse backgrounds with very different skill sets. And so we bring a lot of different things to the table. And so that to me has led to the innovative thinking that I think if you have all of the same look, feel, skill sets, and backgrounds in a room, you don't necessarily get to. That's been my personal experience and how I've explained it. And every time we bring on a new hire, we have that thought process of what are they bringing to the table in terms of skill sets and background, and how does that complement what we already have in our diverse team? But I'd love to hear your quick thoughts on that and how you typically define it.
Well, I think in terms of diverse, for example, let's just say there were six individuals all born in country A, but they all come from different ethnic backgrounds. But they were born in that country, educated in that country. They wouldn't qualify as being diverse because they all have been brought up in that same framework. Whereas you would have six individuals born in different countries who now happen to be in country A together. That would be more defined. And the turning point is age 12. So where did you spend your first 12 years? So that's another time, and I'd love to chat
Yeah,
with you
that's fascinating.
over a glass of Wonder Plus Ivy. Now, I'm going to ask your opinion on this, Dana. You obviously have your fingers on the pulse of the wine industry, and you know that in Europe there are huge challenges, and you have wines that you bring in from Spain. Now, France, as you know, certainly in the Bordeaux area, is wanting to uproot 10% of their vineyard acreage. And I think that could well start to permeate and spread to other countries, certainly even Spain.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that in terms of, you know, the supply chain, and how would it affect you?
So the way we've always thought about building our business model is building in diversity for where we source from. And again, coming from an outsider's perspective, I was seeing the wildfires, the more climate-driven challenges that were happening at that time, where that was just, you know, dramatically impacting supply. And I thought, if we're going to do this, I love the idea of us being global and being diversified to really eliminate risk in that standpoint. And all of our bottles do have the TTP approved limited edition to really allow consumers and all of our partners to understand we very much hope to bring back, assuming the supply and demand is there, every varietal every year, the next vintage. But there are a lot of supply challenges, and particularly that we source certified organic wines, there are challenges in that, that if, you know, it's wiped out by pests or something else climate driven, that might not, that supply might not be there. And so I try to educate and just make aware to all of our partners where and how we source, but then also build in within the business model, the diverse suppliers, so that, you know, losing one supplier 1 year won't wipe us out. It might allow us for an opportunity to innovate and pull from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we try to see it as an opportunity and also be as ahead of it as possible. That being said, some things like a wildfire tomorrow are not something we might know about, but really trying to stay ahead of it. Like you said, understand what's going on in a particular country that we source from, being very aware of it and mindful, but build it within our business model enough to protect us there.
Sounds like you've got some great safety margins there, Dana.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, just to let our viewers know, you mentioned TTP. Could you just explain that?
Oh, the TTP. Thank you. You know what? Coming from finance, I will say I hate acronyms and when people use them and don't explain them. So thank you for calling me out. No, so the TTP, the regulatory body here within the United States that really go through, I had mentioned it particularly because our labels within the United States all need to be approved by the Alcohol and Trade Bureau that regulates all the alcohol industry. And so it's something that, you know, even words like limited edition have really clear regulatory requirements that need to be approved by them in their labeling. And so something that we work on every year.
That's good to know. So now that you've been in the industry and you've sort of cut your teeth, as it were, Dana, and copious amounts of wine have had the pleasure of passing through your lips, do you see taste and view wine differently now that you're in the industry, as opposed to being an outsider prior to the industry?
I love that question. I would say more than anything, I think I have much more of a respect for the winemaking than I ever did before, because I've learned so much about the process. And that's something that I feel very fortunate to have had the opportunity to work with these incredible winemakers, incredible suppliers around the world, and understand much more deeply what goes into it, because it is so challenging. And there's so much hard work that goes into it. And it's an art and a science. And I have that respect for what the winemakers are doing in a way more than I ever did before, for sure.
So you see it from a totally different perspective, do you? I mean, when you taste the wine.
I think so, yeah. You know, well, you know, it's when I taste it, even for, you know, whether it's work-related or pleasure, you know, I certainly do come from a different lens, I will say, now than I did before.
Of course.
And I think even more questions come up in my mind when I'm tasting. We often go to, just as an example, our local liquor store on the street. They're a wonderful wine shop. And we go to their weekly samplings and tastings. And I'm that person who's asking all the questions and wanting to know more about the winemaker and the soil and what led to it. things that I learned impact the taste so much more than I ever knew before. And so I'm a lot more curious. It's a lot more of a thought-provoking experience than before, but I've really learned to love it. And like I said, just the respect for those in the winemaking industry is just so high for me.
Okay. That's insightful. And thank you for that, Dana. So the next question I'm going to ask you, I wish I could say it was a question that I originated, but I didn't. However, I found it very interesting because I was asked this question at a recent interview myself. Mm-hmm. And that question was somber note, but
yeah,
you know, when I posed the question, I thought, oh, very thought provoking. What wine would you serve or would you make sure is served at your funeral?
It's great. You even think about, like, you know, what would you eat? What would you drink at your deathbed? Like you said, a little somber, but, you know, for me, wine will still forever be experiential and bring back memories. And so I say that because I lean towards the wines that are most meaningful to me and something that's so special. And I will say, it was really special for us. We actually got engaged in Tuscany, which was really special before I founded the business. So I will say it was one of the kind of the initial really moments of loves of wine. And we had gone, done a little tasting that day, and my husband poured Modus wine, the red wine, for me that night. And so that's a really special one. I have a lot of wineries that I love and winemakers that I make, but the first one that comes to mind is the wine that my husband proposed to me, because we just have this incredible partnership, and he's honestly supported me like crazy throughout this wild entrepreneurial journey. And that comes to mind. I love the wine, but it's more about what it represents for me, kind of that start of the partnership for them. So I always encourage folks, if you know, to really taste and enjoy the experience. So I think at the end of the day, you're going to remember that experience.
That's wonderful. It was quite similar because I answered champagne.
Yeah.
And I said, I'd like people to celebrate, you know, what my life was, as opposed to being very sad. You know, it's part of life.
Yes.
But now, having said that, where can people buy your wine, Dana?
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you. So Wander and Ivy can be found at wanderandivy.com. We ship direct to 38 states. So most states we can ship to your door, which is great. And we're also on the shelves in stores as well as hotels across 13 states and growing. And so if you go to our website, wanderandivy.com, and look at our store locators, you can see if we're at a store near you, in addition to shipping to your door.
All right. So audience, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, Dana, for joining us today. So if you're looking and you want to have that awe and amazement in terms of wine, then wander no more. Just go to Wander and Ivy. And thank you very much for listening in. And once again, Dana, thank you very much for your insightful, informative, and sharing some of your personal thoughts. And wish you all the very best. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Wine Buzz Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, then please leave a review or share it with a friend. Abwazi is an online wine and spirit institution dedicated to promoting culture and diversity through the world of education. If you're looking to get started, we have a free online course that we are giving out to all our listeners. For more information, head to abwasi.com. That's APWASI.com.